Ladies and gentlemen, this podcast, truly one of the most unusual ever recorded, contains dribble, slang, and frank discussion of subject matter which under no circumstances should be heard by small children, persons with a heart condition, or anyone who is upset easily. If you are such a person, or if you're the parent of a very small child in the room, we urge you to switch off your streaming device now.
Heidi ho, Jen.
Hey, Cam. You're something there.
Thanks. It's Sunday morning. Little slap happy because, you know, we already did one episode. And I do have to pat us on the back. If you were here right now, Jen, I would pat you on the back and I would turn around so that you could pat me on the back, although you'd probably be more like of a shove down the stairs. But how much we've got accomplished this week, I'm pretty impressed with us. It's like, I don't know. We're
actually
professional.
On the ball. I know.
Yeah.
I know. Well, I wouldn't go as far as say professional, but we are on the ball.
I mean,
if you can believe that.
For now, just keep it going. It seems like it's been pretty effortless and little to no mistakes the last couple times, I think.
I would also like to thank Lana McCall. She has been the one that has been helping me with scripts. She is also the one that researched and wrote out this script for me for today.
She's
because,
also really
like we
cute.
Said,
I just thought I'd add that.
She's adorable.
Really cute. She Facebook friend me. She's really cute.
Her entire family's cute. But for those of you, if you didn't hear the last episode I did, Lana has agreed to help me write scripts because of my ADD. I cannot focus very well to write scripts quickly. Camille can write like 10 to my one. So, yeah. So Lana's going to
But on another note, if you ever want to find out about somebody's great lost aunt or uncle from 1902 who ended up, you ask Jennifer. She'll get on that for you.
Or before. Just or before. Saying. Yeah, my mind wanders and I end up on these websites that I have no idea how I got there. But
mm-hmm. Six hours later, I get random text about, did you know that his sister's mother lived in Cahokia, Illinois? Do you know that's really close to us? No, Jennifer, I didn't. Yeah. But yeah.
And that's not it. But anyway, big thanks to Lana. We appreciate you
Golf
so
clap.
Much.
All right. So anyway, I know about today's topic, but I've forgotten about it because it's been so long. So I cannot wait to hear the story, actually. I'm kind of excited.
Well, to tell you the truth, if Lana hadn't have written this, I probably would not be discussing it right now because my fear is great when it comes to anything dealing with my children. And this is about the Thurston High School shooting, which terrifies me.
Mm-hmm.
We had an ordeal with my youngest daughter when she was in first grade. She had to go through a intruder drill, and they never mentioned that it was just a drill. They played it out like it was the real deal. And for years, we had to deal with the anxiety. She never wanted to leave for school because she was afraid something would happen to her dad and I. And she would never get to say goodbye to us. I'm going to start crying here in a minute.
That's awful. That is awful. Well,
yeah, so,
let's think about the big scheme of things. Did you ever in a million years think that schools would have to have intruder drills to try
no,
to prepare?
It's horrible.
And I think a study just came out recently saying that you can do as many intruder drills as you want, but it's not really until it happens. There's no way to prepare for that, which, you know,
there's
it
no
makes
way.
Sense.
Yeah, so, okay, I'm going to have to
Sorry, Jen. I didn't know you were. I mean, you,
oh God, it was.
No, I know.
It's awful.
It's awful. It's
just
a terrible
thinking
thing.
About it, it's awful. No, just how bad Hadley would cry and hang on to me and not want to
go away. I get that.
Well, like she would scream. And
what did the school
awful.
Say? Like, did you contact them and say, "Hey, smooth move"? Like,
yeah.
What?
Later, when I had to send her to the school counselor, and the school counselor talked to the school, but they're like, we don't know what else to do. I mean, my daughter was telling me she was hiding behind her backpack crying, and she was hysterical, and there's nothing they could do. The teacher kept telling them to be quiet.
Yeah, they make you be
you
silent.
Know, she thought she was going to, at first grade, she thought she was going to die.
That's horrific.
And what kills me is she didn't tell me this until a couple months after it happened.
She might not have processed it all the way either, realizing that she was too young. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But it was horrible. But and we could not understand smart. Why she wouldn't go to school, why she hated to get on that bus when before that happened, she loved it and she couldn't wait to go. And then all of a sudden things changed and she was crying and it was horrible. So I can only imagine the pain and suffering survivors of a school shooting have to go through, I guess. I just couldn't imagine.
No, it's terrible. One year, our principal gave us a teacher appreciation gift. I mean, it really wasn't, but that's what he termed it. And it was kind of, that part of it was a joke, but it was teacher appreciation week or whatever. The gift was a 2x4 with a zip tie on the end and Velcro on the board as well as the extra place, and it is to remain in our classrooms next to the door at all times because you fasten it to the door, right. You tie the handle. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? In a million years, you just...
Never.
Who thinks that's going to... You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Ugh, yeah. Boy. And chances are our school is located right by a sheriff substation. So the chances of that happening are pretty slim.
Yeah.
I mean, it could still happen,
you just never know.
But it would be taken down quickly because of the police being there so soon. So we're going to go, it's our first school shooter that we're doing. We're going to talk more about the shooter, Kip Kinkle, who was 15 years old at the time. Now, I know the victims are important here. He murdered 4 people in cold blood and he injured 24. They are important, but I think it's also important to go through the reasoning of why a 14-year-old would do this.
His motivation.
So, are you ready?
Yep, I'm ready.
And the motivation, right, okay. Kiplin Kinkle was born August 30th, 1982, to Bill and Faith Kinkle. Now, Kiplin was his full name, but of course they called him Kip for short. Bill and Faith were married in 1972. Faith was born in Cleveland, Ohio, and graduated from Bowling Green State University. She was a volunteer in the Peace Corps and then moved to the Portland area, where she started teaching. Now, Bill was born in Idaho, and he had been working at the Thurston Middle School in Oregon and Thurston High for over 25 years as a Spanish teacher before retiring in 1991. He didn't fully retire. He still taught some classes at the Lane Community College. They were normal, loving, everyday parents, right? Kip had an older sister, Kristen. She was 6 years older. When Kip was young, his father, Bill, took a sabbatical and they moved to Spain for a year.
Oh, that's cool.
And Kip had a pretty tough time. He was in kindergarten and the teacher and his classmates only spoke in Spanish, so it was a bit difficult for him to understand how things work.
Mm-hmm.
When the family moved back to the United States a year later in 1989, Kip's parents decided to hold him back in the first grade.
Which, let me interject here, studies have shown that that's not the thing to do. It's really hard on the kid's self-esteem. It's better to push them and make them work a little bit harder and work with them to get them caught up. Because as we know, not all kids educate or mature at the same mm-hmm. rate. It's very vital that you don't do that. I mean, that's crushing.
Right. Well, and like as they, as well as their teachers, felt that he lacked maturity and had a slow emotional and physical development, which, that being said, Kip was really upset that he was being held back. He mm-hmm. was mad that all of his friends, were going on without him.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. terrible. It's awful.
Yep.
And you know, just like I know my son has always, always been immature and growth-wise too. Like he's a junior in high school and just now got some underarm hair. Swear to God. My daughter had mm-hmm. speech problems all the way till sixth grade and she was in speech.
Yeah.
It's just each kid develops differently. You can't punish them for that, I don't think.
Oh, yeah. My youngest, granted, she was, you know, the cutoff is July 30th for the school year. Her birthday is July 24th.
Oh.
And so she was always a little emotionally behind, but now mm-hmm. she's right on track. She's in sixth grade. She's right on track where she's supposed to be right now.
Yep. Just takes each kid's
time. And she's smart. I mean, she gets straight A's. She gets, mm-hmm. yeah. She's kind of an evil genius.
She is not little cutie pie. Okay, go ahead.
In second grade, he was known as just an average kid. There's no disciplinary problems, but he was having problems in school, enough to the point to where his parents asked that he should be tested for a learning disability. Mm-hmm. From one of the PBS documentaries I watched on this, his sister said that he would get his E's and 3's confused and his B's and D's confused mm-hmm. when he would write. Hell, I still have problems with that.
That's a sign of dyslexia. Those are the common letters and numbers right. that people...
Right. And he scored above the 90th percentile on the intelligence test, and he was average on the neurological screening test. His doctor was also very concerned over how much trouble he had with spelling, and his emotional response was not doing well academically. During a 25-minute spelling test, he worked very diligently, like more so than a kid his age should. And then he even had trouble spelling his own last name. So, again, when he had his trouble, he would get frustrated and he'd get mm-hmm. very, very anxious. He couldn't handle things very well.
Right. He would lash out.
Correct. Around the third grade, his dad stopped teaching at the high school. He retired, or semi-retired, I should say. But Kip was still having trouble at school, mostly with reading and writing, but he was really good at math. He totally excelled in math. Totally different than you and I.
Mm-hmm.
So his parents had him retested for special ed classes, and thankfully, this time, he was eligible to be put into class. So a plan was drawn up, and he did so well with extra help that by the end of the year, he ended up getting an honor award for improvement in reading and working hard to overcome his frustration. His teacher also reported that there were no behavioral issues, and his grades continued to be A's and B's. See, just a little extra help. Sometimes
it really does.
Just makes like, all the difference.
All the spelling stuff, it's bringing back traumatic things for me because I forgot that time spelling test and the time math test. Man, yeah. you got a timer on you. That's stressful. Why did they do that?
Are you kidding me? Up until like sixth grade, I was spelling of, O-V-E.
Well, to be fair, it is the American language is a little tough. The English language is a little tough like that.
It's very tough, but you know, I was an avid reader. I read constantly. I always made my reading, you know, you had to read a certain amount of fiction and nonfiction. I always made that my goal by mid-year, but I couldn't spell to save my life, nor could I do math. But boy, I could socialize like nobody's business.
Too bad that they don't give you a grade for that, right?
I know. I would have excelled, man.
You would have.
So the next year, fourth grade, Kip was diagnosed with a learning disability, which I'm assuming is dyslexia.
Yeah, I was wondering what it was.
And he worked with a special education counselor for the entire year. And even then, he was placed in the talented and gifted program for his above average performance in science and math. And mm-hmm. you know, sometimes kids, like you're either science and math or you're mm-hmm. lit in history. You know, it just kind of.
Right brain, left brain. Right
exactly.
brain, left brain.
Not much is said in any of the records between Kip's fourth, fifth, and sixth grade school year, but seventh grade rolls around, and here comes his puberty. Things start to change. His sister, who he was very close with, and actually sometimes she was the mediator between he and his parents, she transferred from the University of Oregon to Hawaii Pacific, where she received a full cheerleading scholarship. So she was no longer around to be the mediator, so Kip and his parents had to work out their difficulties themselves. From what I can tell, I think Kip's dad was kind of hard on him. After his sister left, Kip and his friends went to the school computer, and this is so stupid, but kids will be kids, right? They used the school computer to look up books on how to make bombs, and they even ordered one, which I don't know if I should even say if it's illegal to say, but at this time I was working at a bookstore and we sold this book so often. It was always out of stock. We always had to order it. I think we were ordering it by like 15 quantity every time we ordered it because it would always run out of stock.
Really?
Yeah. And that's the Anarchist Cookbook.
Yeah. That's a little frightening. I remember that though.
Yeah. Do you remember selling it? I mean, we sold it like crazy. And this was around that time frame.
You're right, it is.
Mm-hmm. So when his mom found out about this, she started to worry that, you know, Kip wasn't exactly hanging around great people and they were bad influences. And, you know, like most parents, it's never their child's fault, right? Even though he was the one that did it, it had to have been other kids.
His friends, yes.
It was his other people's fault, not her child's fault. Not to say that that's bad. All parents do that. I do that. Everybody does it. So the next year, Kip, again, gets in trouble, but this time he's caught stealing CDs from the local Target. And for some reason, he also started to develop an obsession about handguns, or just guns in general. He was infatuated with it. He actually bought his first gun, which is a sawed-off shotgun, from a friend, which he kept hidden in his room. Now, his parents were kind of pacifists, right?
Well, yeah, that's a little weird.
Yeah.
What, why does your teenage son have a sawed-off shotgun? Not okay.
Right, but they didn't realize he had a sawed-off shotgun, and they didn't understand why he had such an obsession with it, because they were total pacifists. They did not own any guns, they didn't hunt, they didn't do, as far as I know or could find. So, on January 4th, 1997, Kip has his first run-in with the law. He and a bunch of friends are, I believe, on a school snowboarding trip when they decided it would be a smart idea to go throw rocks off a highway overpass.
Oh, no, not a smart idea.
Yeah. So the trouble actually came, well, when they decided to throw rocks, but I think one of Kip's friends actually picked up a bigger rock than just a pebble and threw it over. And they caused damage when it hit a car. It was $50 worth of damage, and they're lucky they didn't kill anyone. And why anybody ever thinks that it's a good idea to throw stuff over an overpass is beyond me. After one of the cars were hit with the big rock, causing about $50 worth of damage, a police officer got to the scene and they immediately arrested Kip's friend. They then found Kip at the hotel where they were staying. And Kip immediately started to cry and asked if anybody got hurt. And of course, Kip didn't claim responsibility for throwing the rock. You know, he said the friend did it. But because you couldn't, it was he said, they couldn't decide who did it. And neither of it could be proven. They were charged and referred to the Department of Youth Services. And around 11:40 at night, Kip's parents were called, and they ended up driving 2 hours to pick him up. Could you believe it? Same night, just left as soon as they got the phone call. I would be so angry. I don't even think I could see enough to drive, to be quite honest.
No, and I'm sure at that point, you know, kids just do dumb stuff. They don't think about it. They don't think about
the consequences. They just live for the moment, right? So now Kip's mom, Faith, she's one of those rare kinds of people in the world. She sees the best in people. She sees potential. Where others see a lost cause, she thinks that there's room to grow and blossom. Those that knew Faith said that violence was the antithesis of her approach in life. So she taught cultural understandings through education, communication, and travel. So when Kip started displaying violent tendencies and behavior that Faith and Bill felt was inappropriate, she wanted to get some help, not to punish him. She wanted to help him. Mm-hmm. So 14-year-old...
As a mom, I get that. Like, you know, you don't... Who wants to think that their child could ever be damaged and do something wrong? Of course, you don't want to believe that.
But... Exactly. But it can happen, as your last episode.
That's what I'm saying. Like, yet it happens it again happens. And again and again.
Kip's being violent, right? Nobody needs a violent boy, 14-year-old son in their life. So Faith decided that Kip should see a psychiatrist. Now, that being said, Bill did not agree on psychiatric help. He actually, from the documentary on PBS, the daughter stated that her dad felt it was like going to a chiropractor. It was kind of not really a bogus science, but it just wasn't needed. Let's put it that way. But he relented and they did take Kip to a doctor. On January 29th, 1997, Kip starts meeting with Dr. Jeffrey Hicks. Now, let it be known that since, you know, Bill wasn't quite the avid believer in psychiatrists, that it was just Faith and Kip that went to these meetings. Faith told the doctor that she was extremely concerned over Kip's, quote, extreme interest in guns, knives, and explosives. And she was afraid that he would either harm himself or harm others. So she asked the doctor if he could help Kip learn more appropriate ways to manage his anger and not lash out, which is quite understandable.
Right. Yeah, totally.
In the first session, the doctor noted that Kip became tearful when discussing his relationship with his father. And it said that his mom viewed him as, quote, a good kid with some bad habits, while his father saw him as a bad kid with bad habits, end quote, which is kind of sad.
It is.
He thought his dad expected the worst of him, and he didn't feel supported. He diagnosed Kip with major depressive disorder, but with no mention of schizophrenia, which will be important later on.
But so, he's little, too. I mean, he's still younger. Those harsh conditions, that's a very harsh diagnosis for somebody that young, you
right.
know?
Well, even though it starts popping out in the teenage years, schizophrenia starts to show himself, unless he's... The kid's having problems showing emotions, and depending on how his mm-hmm. father was, if his father was very stoic and boys don't cry mm-hmm. or boys don't, you know, that could play a lot of it too. My girls sometimes have problems expressing emotion and they will lash out and push their mm-hmm. sister.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of what kids
push their little sister.
Push their little sister against the wall till she hits her head really hard and cries for a half hour and can't be calmed down. But I digress.
Just for example.
Yeah, for example, that could happen maybe to somebody. So it's normal for a kid not to be able to express their emotions, correct?
Yes.
And depression runs deep in kids. In some kids, I should say. So let's fast forward to February 26th. At this point, Kip only had one other session with Dr. Hicks. And the Kinkle family goes to the Skipworth Juvenile Facility to meet with Dr. John Crumbly. And on intake, he noticed that the Kinkles were very impressive parents. They wanted him to take responsibility for what he did and to make things right with the victim of the car pebble over the mm-hmm. overpass thing. Dr. Crumbly thought he was appropriately remorseful and straightforward about his role and what happened. He thought that Kip was different from the other kids that he usually saw and that he wasn't really a delinquent. The doctor felt that it was more of a boyish or childish crime and that there really wasn't a solid case against Kip. So Kip agreed to complete the 32 hours of community service, write a letter of apology, and pay the whopping $15 in damages to the car and car.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Did that come out of his piggy bank? I'm sure.
I would guess so. I mean, I'd make my kids pay for it.
No, I know, but that's right. Not much is my point.
Well, but it was a lot when I was that age.
Yeah, but still.
So this is around the same time that Kip had his third counseling session with Dr. Hicks. He reported that he had had this ongoing interest in explosives and that he was still depressed, but he wasn't suicidal. Now, when I say that he had an interest in explosives, the PBS special that I watched said that when he would get aggravated and frustrated, he would make bombs to blow up. He would detonate explosives and it would make him feel better. He had to destroy something to make himself feel better.
Yeah, that's a red flag.
Thank you.
Hmm.
Now we're into the April session. He had another therapy session and it was the same as February. Things haven't been really progressing. It's just kind of flatlined there. On April 23rd through the 29th of 1997, Kip is suspended for 2 days from school. Seems he was shoved by another kid, and in response to him being shoved, he kicked the kid in the head.
I'm just thinking, how did he get to his head?
Well,
like if he was shoved, did he slug him and then the kid fell down or something?
Well, somebody shoved him, right? Didn't mean that he actually fell down, but he was shoved.
Okay.
Kip actually...
But how did his foot get up to the kid's head?
Well, Kip actually had karate lessons when he was younger. His parents let him do karate.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So he kicks the kid in the head, and Kip is the only one that's punished. And his mom is angry, as well as Kip is. After his suspension is over, he comes back to school and throws a pencil at another student, which the teacher said was assault. So he's suspended again.
Really? I guess it depends on how he threw it. Like, was it in anger? Did it hurt the kid? Or was it like, hey, here's a pencil?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, was he using it as a weapon or was it more like...
I'm assuming since the teacher thought it was an assault that he threw it, like maybe the kid said something and the kid threw it out in anger and threw it hard. I mean, pencils can be...
Oh, I gotcha. I know.
can hurt.
They can be a weapon.
They can. Yeah. You can get lead poisoning. Mm-hmm. On April 30th, Kip and Faith see Dr. Hicks again, and they discuss the recent suspensions and how they felt like school wasn't really acknowledging or considering how much progress Kip had made in school and in his own life, and they felt the entire situation was being unfairly handled.
Hmm.
So, on June 2nd, 1997, at the doctor's, at the therapy session, Kip told the doctor he was, you know, he felt eating was a chore. Food didn't really taste good. He was tired all the time. He was bored and he was irritable. He felt like there's nothing to look forward to. He was more cynical in life, basically. He denied that he ever thought of suicide or that he even planned to commit suicide or how he would plan to commit suicide. Mm-hmm. But Dr. Hicks felt that antidepressants would be worth looking into and maybe he should be.
Mm-hmm.
So he forwards the information to Kip's primary doctor, and by June 18th, Kip starts taking Prozac.
Okay.
So that seemed to be working. He was less depressed, he slept better, and he had no angry outbursts. So Prozac seems to be working for Kip. So a good turn in the right direction, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in the meantime, Kip is still fascinated with guns. He wants a gun. His parents don't know about the sawed-off shotgun. And he keeps begging his parents for a gun. It's all he talks about.
For a gift.
A gun, mm-hmm. right? So Bill and Kip come to an understanding that Kip will research a model of a gun, and using his own money, Kip will go out with his father and purchase a gun. Kip chooses a 9mm Glock. Now,
what?
Yeah, a Glock.
I was thinking like deer rifle.
No, a Glock. That's right? That's what...
No,
I know at one point...
Nobody needs that.
No. Well, police officers used to carry a Glock, like the...
Well, that's my...
This time.
Rightfully, some teenager does not need one. There you go.
Exactly. Now, there were rules put in place. Kip was not allowed to use the gun without Bill being present. And it wouldn't officially belong to Kip until Kip turned 21 years old. Now, Dr. Hicks would later testify in court that he found out about this only after the gun was purchased. But if they would have talked to him about Kip getting a gun, he would have definitely had concerns about it. He would have probably said, no way, Jose. I don't think he would use such clinical terms as that. He'd dumb it down a little bit more than no way, Jose, but I think it would work.
Yeah. Well, he says he's not suicidal, but he's definitely depressed. So. Even in that scenario,
you shouldn't have
used
exactly
to harm himself, you know? So why would you? Nope. Okay,
well,
go ahead.
Bill, his dad, thought if Kip is going to have this fascination with guns, he should at least know how to be safe and be able to use it. Mm-hmm. Kip's 8 counseling session was on July 9th, 1997. Faith felt that Kip was less irritable and generally in a better mood with no angry outbursts. And on top of that, he was getting along better with his parents. His father, in particular, was making efforts to spend more time with Kip, which is great. That's the Prozac, you know, and it's great that Bill is spending more time with, you know, it's important for a boy to spend time with other men. It doesn't have to be their father. It just has to be another man.
Yeah, I agree.
So.
And I get that they bought him the gun because, like, you love your child and you want them to be happy. And I'm sure... You know, having a child that's depressed or some emotional issues and things like that, you're kind of at your wit's end, hoping that you can make them better.
Right.
You know, I mean, I get that, but Glock, I don't think is the way I would have went. But
I wouldn't have either, but that's a different story.
Okay.
And I'm not against guns whatsoever. I don't want anybody to think that we're anti-guns or anti-gun state.
Just
we have our opinions about certain situations, but we're not anti-gun, put it that way.
He's depressed. He's struggling with some
depression
issues.
The ninth and final session of counseling came on July 30th, 1997. Now, it was decided that Kip was doing well enough to discontinue treatment because he didn't appear depressed anymore. I'm going to say this, and this is my own personal opinion, and this has nothing to do with the research or writing or anything. I will say this from my own experience.
From Jen.
From Jen. This is me. Any hate letters or anything go directly to me. It's my experience when seeking psychiatric help, most doctors and insurance companies that work together, you are allowed like 9 free visits, right? Your insurance covers 9 or eight or however many sessions without having to pay it is fully covered. After those sessions, you need to start paying your premium or whatever, whatever it's called. I forget what it is. Copay, whatever. My feeling on this is that since Kip's father really didn't like the sessions, he didn't really agree with the psychiatric treatment, that maybe they quit because he was doing better because he was on Prozac, and they felt that they didn't need to pay to continue the counseling.
That's what they thought, that he was better and that they could quit because it was fine now.
Exactly, because the doctor agreed that he was doing better. And it was basically all because of the Prozac, is my thinking on this. Now, I could be wrong, but that's just my opinion. The doctor could totally felt that he was doing fine and on the right course. And I do know that therapy treatments are really expensive, especially if you don't have insurance. I know one counselor that I know does not accept insurance, and it's $300 every time you go. Cash, by the way.
Really?
Yes.
That's terrible.
It's expensive. No insurance. They don't go through insurance at all. And a lot of doctors are starting to do that. So that same summer of 1997, Kip bought a .22 pistol from a friend, and he kept that hidden from his parents, just like he had his sawed-off shotgun. So how many does that make? Three.
And
firearms.
That's three too many for a depressed child to have.
And his parents only know he has one. So at the end of middle school, his fellow students nominated Kip as most likely to start World War III. And he was also
a superlative you don't want.
No. He was also known as the kid who would brag about blowing up animals with firecrackers. And though he never admitted that he did that, though. So
that we know of. He might have done that and kept that to himself, too.
He could have. So when his freshman year began, according to the people who knew Kip, he was doing great. Things were more positive. Well, at least it seems that way anyway. His dad had a friend who decided that, you know what, it would be a good idea for Kip to be a part of the team. And he thought football was the answer. Kip's small. Like, he was maybe 5'5", 120 pounds. So he wasn't...
So my size.
Duh, yeah. He's a little bit more heavier than I am. But he wasn't like a football player. So he was on like third string. He was a lineman and like third string on the team. So he wasn't, I'm sure that didn't help his self-esteem much. And towards the end of fall of 97, he stopped taking his Prozac. Now his parents allowed him to do this too. FYI. He was doing so well. They just decided Prozac quit taking it.
That's the classic thing though. You do well because the medicine's helping you, you know?
Yeah.
That's like with
a lot of bipolar people, a lot of people with mental health issues, they start...
Because you do feel better.
Yeah.
You do feel better.
And you think, yeah, I'm fine. I don't need it anymore. And you know what? It's the medicine that's making you happy, not your brain. Your brain wants to deceive that medicine. Anyway, I could go on, but I'm not going to. So on the September 30th, his dad, Bill, decides to buy Kip another gun under the same conditions.
So it's four?
Under the same conditions as before. This is four, but his dad... doesn't know about the other two.
Thinks there's two. But why does he need, why do you need that many? Like, he needs to be upset with, like, Hot Wheels cars or something.
Right.
You know? Something a little bit more positive.
Well, and it's the same conditions as before, where he's not supposed to be used without adult supervision, and Kip wouldn't own it, really, until he was 21 years old. And this time, it was a .22 Ruger semi-automatic rifle. So... in school that fall, Kip was in speech class, and he gave a speech on what? How to make a bomb. Now, most people would nowadays would be alarmed about this, but his teachers nor the students really weren't. The speech involved detailed drawings of explosives attached to a clock, and nobody really cared. But then again, another student did a speech on how to join the Church of Satan.
Oh, okay.
So,
this is an informative speech, I gather.
They're kids. They're going to do things for a shock value, right?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, exactly.
My 13-year-old had to write a paper on the human body, and she said one specific part of the human body, and she said everybody rushed to either do the vaginal canal, the anus, or the breast. I mean, those were like what people wanted to do first.
Welcome to middle school.
She did the spleen. I'm like, that's good. Okay. Everybody needs the spleen.
That's my girl.
Yeah. In the first part of the school year of 1997, there were two school shootings. One happened on October 1st, which was at Pearl, Mississippi School. It's where a 16-year-old killed two students and injured seven others after he first killed his mother that morning. And then on December 1st, a couple months later, the West Paducah, Kentucky school shooting happened. That's where a 14-year-old redhead, remember the little redhead? Mm-hmm. He killed three and injured five more. So that's kind of a big thing that happens, right? So on December 14th, Bill confided in someone at the airport during a layover how he was struggling with his son, Kip. And he said that he was becoming more difficult to manage. He was playing with explosives and he was having trouble in school. So we're going to skip ahead a couple months. And on March 24th, 1998, Kip and a friend were watching footage of the Jonesboro school shooting in Arkansas. His friend later said in the PBS documentary that I watched, said that Kip said he'd do it differently, that he'd kill himself if he were to do it.
Oh.
So May...
Do it first? Like kill all the people first? Kill all the kids first, then kill himself?
Yeah, like if he were to do that, that's what he would do. In May of 1998, Kip and his best friend Tony arranged to have a sleepover. And they and a bunch of other kids attempt to break the school TP record, which I didn't even know that there is such a thing as a TP record, but I guess at his school there is. These teens saved over 400 rolls of toilet paper and totally bombarded this woman's house with toilet paper. 400 rolls. Can you imagine how expensive that is? No. As a mother, yes. I'm thinking, holy shit, how much money did that waste?
Literally.
Exactly. Well, they were caught. And Kip, of course, had to help clean up. And believe it or not, he was one of the few that actually got grounded for the incident.
Okay. I was just thinking earlier that if you're young enough to be having a sleepover with your friends, you're too young to have four guns.
You think?
Right.
Well, I guess he was going to stay the night because they needed to get...
Maybe
his friends...
If you're young enough to be hanging out with your buddies and you want to stay the night with them, then you don't need to... Yeah. Mm. I mean, maybe a deer rifle or something like that if you're a hunter, but you don't need...
A Glock or a semi-automatic rifle?
I don't know. A sawed-off shotgun, to me, just screams bank robbery. Mm-hmm. And I don't think... I don't know. Call me crazy. No. Call me old-fashioned.
So on May 19th, a kid from school by the name of Corey steals a gun from the father of another friend. Corey then arranges to sell the gun to Kip the next day. But we don't know whether or not Kip knew that that gun is stolen. It's never been said. And ironically enough, the day before, Kip's mother, Faith, is recognized as one of the most outstanding teachers of the year in the entire school district where she teaches. All right, so now we're on May 20th, and this is where it all starts to go wrong. On the morning of May 20th, 1998, Kip goes to school with $110. Now, he uses that money to purchase the .22 Beretta semi-automatic pistol from Corey, the gun that Corey stole from the friend's father.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the gun came with 9 rounds. It was already loaded. And Kip stored the gun in a paper bag in his locker. Now, the dad's name is Scott, and he wasn't so easily deceived. So that same morning, Scott, whose gun it was, noticed that his gun was missing. So he called the school to report that one of his son's friends probably did take the gun, and he gave them a list of names of who he suspected stole it. Mm-hmm. And it should be noted, and I'll tell you, Kip wasn't on the list. He didn't think Kip was not a suspect.
And to be fair, Kip didn't steal it. Somebody else did.
Right.
So there's that.
But also that morning, Detective Al Warthen was at the school. And he talked to all the kids. And he was sent to go talk to Kip. So one of the teachers came to the classroom Kip was at and said, you know, we need to speak with you privately, come to the office, and they questioned him about the gun. Well, when he asked, he admitted that, yes, he did have the gun and it was in his locker. So immediately, Kip and Corey were placed under arrest and they were escorted off the school premises in handcuffs. And of course, they were suspended, as they should be. And they were most likely going to be expelled, no question about it.
And in big trouble.
As they should. That's serious business there. That's not cool. So around 9:30 in the morning, Kip was brought to the police station. He was fingerprinted, photographed, and charged with possession of a firearm in a public building and a felony charge of receiving a stolen weapon. Detective Worthen interviewed him, and he later recalled that Kip was very upset about the situation, and he worried about what his parents would think, as I'm assuming most kids would. I know I would be horrified. They released Kip to his father, Bill, and then later the deputy district attorney said that the decision was common. If a youth is arrested for a Class C felony, and there's no outstanding warrants against them, and no immediate threat to themselves or others, they're released to a parent. So Bill picked Kip up from the police station. They stopped at Burger King before heading home, and that was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Really? I'm not passing judgment here, but I think I would be like, we are not stopping at Burger King. You can eat at home. Like, I just don't... I find that a weird little thing.
Who knows?
I just picked up my son for having a gun, a loaded gun, at school in his locker. I don't think I'm going to swing by Burger King for you.
Yeah, maybe it was for him.
Maybe that's just me. Even more, I would not be hungry. I would not be eating.
I'd be pissed. Yeah.
That's what I mean.
So the two of them get home and Bill starts making phone calls. One of the calls Bill makes was to a friend, and he mentioned that maybe a boarding school should be in order for Kip. They were talking about how he should handle the situation with Kip. And Kip, of course, was overhearing the conversations. And both Kip and Bill were discussed how they were going to break the news to Faith and how they thought she was going to handle what happened. Obviously, I don't think she would handle it very well. I would fly off the handle. About 3 o'clock in the afternoon, another call comes in, and this one's from Scott, the father, the one with the stolen gun. He called Bill when he found out that Kip was arrested, and he now says that he recalls how Bill was very upset, which of course he would be, and Bill said, quote, I don't know what to do at this point, end quote, and he was distraught, and Bill thought that Kip was totally out of control.
I would agree.
Now, remember, Dr. Hicks said that Kip was very emotional, right? Whenever he got upset, he liked to blow stuff up, all that kind of stuff. And yes, he does make mistakes, and he is always very upset when he gets caught, more than any kid gets. Well, not more than any kid, but more than
your
normal
teenage
boy, right? He said that Kip was irrationally upset, and he overreacts every time he's caught.
Yeah, I get that.
And now at this point, upon hearing how ashamed his father was and how overwhelmed with the situation Bill was, and remember, he already felt that his father wasn't proud of him at all, right? And I hate to say this because it's such a bad thing to say, but this triggered Kip. Don't mean triggered, but this set him off.
I know. Yeah, I think triggered would be a poor choice of words.
This kind of,
however,
this set Kip off.
This is where I have to say, and I see this a lot in what I do for a living. There comes a time as a person, and even if you're a teenager, you have to take responsibility for what you do. You have to. And so many of these kids don't.
Right.
They don't. And so Kip knows that his parents would not be happy about this.
Right.
That cannot have come to as a shock to him.
No.
So how could he be upset with them for being upset with him, right? I
don't think
he can't process that. I get it.
Right.
But I'm saying that, like, it's just, you have to realize that. Like, you did this. You brought this on yourself. You did it.
And
I think a lot of times kids don't take responsibility, but then also you have the parents that don't, their child, you know, their child's just fine. They're okay. They're just having a rough time or whatever. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I don't think Kip had a hard time knowing that he messed up. I think he knew he messed up. I think he didn't want to see his emotional turmoil he caused his family.
It's his inability. This happens with a lot of people
that couldn't commit
crimes.
Pass.
It's their inability to look ahead and see what the consequences of this is going to be, right? And he didn't do that. Because if he would sit down, any person, a two-year-old, can sit on a couch, and if they hit mommy, they know mommy's going to be upset, right? Or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so, like, the inability to either look ahead or they look ahead and they don't care. I don't know.
Once Bill hung up the phone with Scott, Kip goes into his bedroom, grabs his .22 semi-automatic rifle, grabs the ammo that was kept in his parents' room while the dad is at the kitchen counter drinking his coffee. Kip comes up to him and fires one shot into his head directly behind his ear, instantly killing him.
I forgot that he killed his parents.
He drags his father's body into the bathroom and then covers it with a sheet. Now, I'm thinking that, like you said, they can't take the responsibility. I'm thinking Kip maybe couldn't take the disappointment that he brought upon his parents, and he didn't want to see it, and this was his reaction on how to get rid of it. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, but then it's even going to be worse.
I know, but that's all I can think of why he would do this, because he would get upset unless it was all a game. Like, he overacted because he thought that's what everybody expected of him, is to overact. And if he overacted and said he was so sorry, oh my God, I didn't mean to, that maybe people would forgive him quicker.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have any kind of psych degree, or nor do I play anything like that on TV.
You play with? Yeah, I was just going to say that. You beat me to it.
Uh-huh.
Okay, go ahead.
So the adrenaline must have been pulsing through his body. I mean, he had taken it way too far, and he knew it was. And he just didn't kick the dog or punch a hole through the wall. I mean, this time he, like, killed his dad. Mm-hmm. You know, he must have. I couldn't imagine what was going through his mind at that time.
I was just thinking, if he had plotted that part out earlier, I wonder, you know.
I don't know.
He thought about that. Or if it was just a
reaction. Spur of the moment.
He just did. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, from the time, it's still premeditated, because he actually had to go get the gun to do it. And I would think that constitutes as premeditation. If he had the gun in his hand and then just shot it, I don't think that would be premeditated.
Well, and the fact that he drug his body down, it's not like he, you know, entered a state of shock at that moment.
Right.
Like, he had to comprehend what he was doing after that, too, which is really unthinkable. I can't imagine doing that and then doing what he did, taking his body in the other room.
Right. So around 3:30, another one of Bill's friends calls, and Kip answers, and he goes on to say that, you know, Bill wasn't there right now, couldn't really talk. Around 4 o'clock, another call comes in, and this time it's one of Kip's friends asking, you know, where his dad was, you know, probably just talking and said, you know, where'd your dad go? Or are you, you know how kids are.
Yeah.
Kip states that his dad went to the store, and then while they were talking on the phone, call waiting, he said, was going off, and he had to get off the phone.
Hmm.
Right. So he got off the phone with his friend. And just 30 minutes after, one of the students in Bill's Spanish class at the university calls to see where he was, since he had missed a class.
Mm-hmm.
Kip tells the student that he wouldn't be in because of family problems, which is true. There's a lot of family problems going on there.
Yeah, boy, is there.
Kip's best friends, Nick and Tony, have a conference call, and Kip tells them that he never knew that the gun was Scott's. And then he tells the two boys that his dad had gone out to a bar, and he was worried about what they would think of
him. What if they were worried that his friends would think of him, meaning Kip? He's messed up.
Yeah, it's like he tells the boys that his dad had gone out to a bar and that he was worried about what everybody was going to think of what he did and how embarrassed they would be and how his parents are, you know, taking the news of what happened. Later, his friends would recall how Kip kept repeating, oh, it's over. Everything's over. It's done. Nothing matters now. Those were his words. Kip goes back and forth between being angry and being very upset. And he tells Tony that his stomach was hurting and he felt like he was going to throw up. I would think so. Kip also told the boys that he wanted the gun and he knew he shouldn't have done it, and he didn't purchase it with the intent of really ever doing anything with it. Tony would also say that Kip kept asking, "Where's my mom? When is she going to be home?" Around 6:30 p.m., Kip's mother arrives home.
Tell me what happens when you get home. You were feeling really guilty.
Yeah.
So was your dad, did he hit you or anything like that?
No.
Okay. Was he yelling or out of control or?
Yes, I couldn't let my, I didn't know what to talk. I had no other choice. You said I was.
Okay. He's mad at you because you got caught at school with a gun, right?
Right.
Okay.
And all his friends and everything knew about it.
So he was feeling ashamed and embarrassed because you did something wrong. Is that right?
Okay. I didn't want to. I love my dad, that's why.
You love him, so that's why you had to kill him?
Yeah. Oh my God. My parents were good people. I didn't know what to do because, oh my God, my mom was coming home with. She knew what I said. Oh my God.
So your mom comes home around 6, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Where are you at?
I was waiting for her.
Okay.
I just want to die.
I know.
Oh God.
So, you told me that your mom gets out of the Explorer and starts up the stairs from the garage or basement, is that right?
Yes.
Do you say anything to her?
Yes, I told her I loved her.
And then you
God damn, these bosses are putting in my head!
All right, thanks. Settle down. It's alright. Just settle down, okay? Alright, just settle down.
Shoots his mother 6 times. 5 bullets were found lodged in her brain and 1 in her heart. The murder of Kip's father was from the shame that Kip felt for being caught purchasing a gun at school. The murder of Kip's mother was from the shame that Kip felt in killing his father. Now that Kip had killed both his parents, the feeling of shame was overwhelming. He didn't want people to know that he killed his parents, particularly not his classmates. So, of course, they were next. Now, I just want to warn anyone who may be triggered by school shootings. On the morning of May 21st, 1998, Kip didn't really sleep the night before. 7:30 a.m. comes, and Kip tapes a knife to his leg. He uses masking tape to adhere 2 bullets to his chest, a .22 and a 9mm bullet. The final touch? A trench coat. He loads his backpack with ammo and fills his coat with 3 guns. A .22 caliber semi-automatic Ruger rifle, his father's 9mm Glock pistol, and a .22 caliber Ruger semi-automatic pistol. He takes his mother's Ford Explorer to school, and he parks a block away. He walks down a dirt path, a shortcut to the school. Security cameras catch Kip at 7:55 a.m. entering the school. There is no indication that he has an arsenal with him. Kip enters the school and walks down the hallway toward the cafeteria, which had around 400 students in it. They were all waiting for the first bell to ring, which indicated that first period was about to start. Kip saw one of his friends and warned him to stay out of the cafeteria. As soon as he warned his friend, Kip passes Bill Walker and Ryan Atbury. Kip kills Ben Walker. Ben is just 16 years old, and he would live on in the bodies of 12 people who received his donated organs. When Kip walked in, the students were kind of confused as to why he was there, because hadn't he been suspended the day before? As soon as Kip enters the cafeteria, he fires off the rest of a 50-round clip from his .22 semi-automatic and a round from the 9mm Glock into the cafeteria. One of the other students that got hit was 17-year-old Michael Nicolason. Just 3 days before the shooting, he had enlisted in the Oregon National Guard. When he was buried, he did so with full military honors. Kip knew Michael and would often talk with his friends about how Michael was constantly making out with his fiancée in the hallways. Kip then shoots 25 other students. Some of his classmates would later recall how completely stoic Kip looked. Like, one said his face was casual, like it was something he did every day. Others said that he looked almost like an adult. He looked bigger somehow. Some said they didn't even see the gun, but they felt it, thinking it may have been like a paintball gun.
Mm-hmm.
One girl who was shot in the shoulder said the only thing that she was worried about was how her shirt was ruined from the red stain that she thought was a paintball.
I think that's normal. I think you don't think you're going to be shot
no.
at school or anywhere else, right? So no. I think that you do those things kind of, yeah.
You're shocked. Your brain's kind of protecting you. Kip takes his gun and holds it directly to Ryan Crowley's head. He hears the click of the rifle, but he lives. Kip ran out of bullets.
Oh my gosh.
Can you imagine? As Kip was going to reload his gun, five classmates, including 17-year-old Jake Riker, who's a 6'4" wrestler. He had also suffered a gunshot to his lungs. He was still one of the ones that tackled Kip to the ground, preventing the deaths of more students.
Jake, you're my hero.
Total hero.
Wow.
He and the four other classmates, total hero. That took so much guts. I couldn't even imagine.
Mm-mm. Nope, me neither. Think about how many lives they saved.
Oh. Oh, God. While he was under like this huge dog pile, I mean, these kids were like beating him, punching him in the face.
Oh, yeah.
Kip was saying stuff like, I just want to die. Just kill me. I want to die. And at 7:56, first officer arrived at the scene, the officer Dan Bishop. He sees the students on top of Kip, and this is about 8:04. And I think at one point, if I recall correctly, Kip takes the knife that's strapped to his leg. And he tries to kill the police officer because he wants to die. He's telling the police officer he wants to die.
Right.
So basically, Kip wants to commit suicide, but he's too chicken to do it himself.
Yep. Cop by suicide. I mean, suicide by cop.
Or whatever it takes, right? So Officer Bishop searches Kip and reads him his Miranda rights. The officer gives Kip to Detective Jones. And soon after, Detective Al Worthen, who recognized Kip as the kid arrested the day before, takes Kip into custody. By 8:50, Worthen locks Kip in an interview room while he gets his photo equipment set up.
It's pretty remarkable if you think about it, because he had just started shooting not even an hour and a half ago, and he's sitting in a police investigation room. I mean,
an hour ago. I know. It's amazing. Good call on the cops. So by 8:50, Worthen locks up Kip in the interview room while he gets his photo equipment set up. In the time that Worthen is gone, Kip managed, with handcuffs on, by the way, to pull the knife that was taped to his leg. When Detective Worthen returns, Kip rushes at him saying, kill me, shoot me. And this, he later admitted that he did this because he felt shame and he wanted to be shot by the detectives. Suicide by cop. Mm-hmm. Worthen was finally able to get out of the room and he sees Kip start using the knife on his own wrist. So Wortham comes back with another detective and they pepper spray Kip and they take the knife. By 9:08 a.m., Kip gives his confession. They then photograph Kip with and without clothes, and then they see the bullets taped to his chest, and he admits that he had one of each so he could kill himself. At 9:30, after police are dispatched to his house, his parents are found. Three detectives arrive on the scene, and through the glass door, they see hundreds of rounds of .22 caliber ammo all over the living room floor, just piled on the living room floor. And when they open the door, they hear the CD soundtrack of Romeo and Juliet, and it's on repeat, and it's loud. They said it was so loud, they had to scream to hear each other. They go through the house, and of course, they find Kip's parents. On the coffee table in the living room, they came across a confession note written by Kip. And here's the note. Mm-hmm. I have just killed my parents. I don't know what is happening. I love my mom and dad so much. I just got two felonies on my record. My parents can't take that. It would destroy them. The embarrassment would be too much for them. They couldn't live with themselves. I'm so sorry. I am a horrible son. I wish I had been aborted. I destroy everything I touch. I can't eat. I can't sleep. I didn't deserve them. They were wonderful people. It's not their fault or the fault of any person, organization, or television show. My head just doesn't work right. God damn those voices inside my head. I want to die. I want to be gone, but I have to kill people. I don't know why. I'm so very sorry. Why did God do this to me? I have never been happy. I wish I was happy. I wish I'd made my mother proud. I'm nothing. I've tried so hard to find happiness. But you know me. I hate everything. I have no other choice. What have I become? I am so sorry.
So what jumps out to
that
me?
That was his note.
What jumps out to me immediately is the voices in his head. Were those real? Or was, like, had he...
I don't know.
Had he said that he heard voices in his head?
Later, Dr. Hicks would go on record stating that he never had heard Kip state anything about that. As they search Kip's room, knowing that Kip had a fascination with explosives, they were, of course, very cautious. They came across a live bomb constructed from soda cans, set with a hobby fuse that worked off a flashlight battery. Then another bomb, but this time it was made from a fire extinguisher, fully equipped with a digital timer. This one had enough of a charge to cause damage to at least a half mile of houses.
Oh.
The police make the decision to evacuate 15 homes that were nearby. And this is a lot considering the neighborhood that Kip's house resided in was mostly wooded and houses were on 2 to 5 acre lots. Mm-hmm. So that's huge. And also keep in mind that the bodies of Bill and Faith were still in the house and they would remain there. Bill remained there for 48 hours and Faith was there for 24 before they were able to take the bodies out. During this time, Kristen, Kip's sister, gets a call at college about how there was a shooting. And as she turns on the news, she learns that her brother was the one responsible. I can only imagine how awful that would be. Could you?
No, terrible. I can't. Nope.
A few hours later that day, Kip agrees to accompany the police to the school. Why the police would want to do this, I have no clue. Same day, by the way.
Well,
same day.
Couple reasons, I would surmise. Not only to figure out more details on the crime, but also probably knowing his love of explosives, maybe he put some in there for later to hurt police
Could
officers
be.
Or to hurt kids again. I mean, if he's not, he is a kid himself, so not thinking ahead, he might in his head think the kids, well, when they go back to school, you know what I mean? Not realizing that
right.
This is going to take a while. And also just to get some more, I mean, shootings, mass shootings like this, especially with teenagers. It's still misunderstood. Like, they don't know a lot about it. So maybe they were hoping to get some insight into that as well. Why he chose who he chose and where he went, you know, to, yeah, that's Detective Camille.
During the visit, the police film and they start asking Kip on the tour of the high school what exactly happened and what he had did. And if you want to see this, you can go to YouTube. It's somewhere on there. And this time, Kip isn't as emotional as how he was at the police station. He's pretty quiet and pretty reserved. but he's honest and he doesn't try to hide what he did, and he's not boasting. He's just stating matter-of-factly. It's almost like he's in shock, mm-hmm. basically.
I'm sure he was, or I would think he was.
The amount of explosives and weapons in Kip's room is staggering. Ready? 3 timed bombs, 2 pipe bombs, fireworks, 2 155-millimeter artillery shell casings, they're howitzer shells, a hand grenade, a sawed-off shotgun, an extensive knife collection, several books on how to make explosives, a handgun, chemicals, and partially assembled bombs found in the crawl space under the house.
All right, I have questions here. Now, I don't want to blame anybody. I don't want to...
No.
But you know where I'm going with this. Did the parents never go in his room? Did they never see that? If I found any one of those items in my child's room, I would... There's an issue. I mean, you know, these aren't bottle rockets. You know, these aren't little smoke bombs for July 4th. If you're in the U.S., you know what that is, right? But
right.
These are pipe bombs, for God's sake. No way.
Well, but there were fireworks in there, but fireworks do not belong in the house. They're in the garage or they're in the shed. They should be shot off at the holiday. They should not be in your room ever. It is a fire hazard for the want of anything else to say. I mean, it's gunpowder. I'm with you. And I will be the first to admit, I do not go into my kids' rooms because they are such a disaster that I can't even stand to think about going in their rooms.
You go in there every once in a while, though, don't you? I go in and snoop around. I got to make sure everything's okay.
Yeah. I mean, every once in a while I go in. I mean, I could see maybe a hand grenade getting in there because you can put it in a drawer. But
no kid should have a hand grenade. That's my point.
Oh, no.
Like, none of that
stuff
should
have been in
there.
No one should have a hand grenade. No one outside of the army or military should have a hand grenade. That's just, I don't even know if that's legal, but I guess it would be.
None of that other stuff is legal. Nobody can have a pipe bomb in their house. Nobody can have explosives in their house. And the fact that the kid's a teenager and he has this obsession with guns like that, that's not normal.
A lot happened after the shooting. But I want to be quick to say that even though the confession Kip gave indicated that he may have had an issue with schizophrenia, in this case, Oregon has the guilty but insane, which is the innocent by reason of insanity plea type thing. You know, theirs is just called something different. Kip took the plea deal, and most people would be upset with a plea deal because you get a shorter time. But this time, Kip was sentenced to 112 years in prison without the possibility of parole.
Was that the plea? Like, was that a better deal than what he would have gotten? Was it to avoid the death penalty?
I have no idea. I know that his sister was allegedly the one who told him he should take the plea, that he should plead guilty and spare everyone the trial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that he shouldn't do the guilty by insanity. Mm-hmm. He should just take the plea deal. After all this happened, a campaign called Let It In Here started to stop school violence. One student was shot so severely that it was thought that she would not survive, and her name is Teresa Miltenberger. She was shot in the forehead, and her head was so badly swollen from the bullet that her mom had to examine her hands and feet to be able to recognize her.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
Teresa had to be kept on life support because her mother was out of town, and they didn't want to take her off life support because they wanted her mother to be able to say her final goodbye, which is killing me right now. When her mother got to her and they took Teresa off life support, she kept breathing. Not only that, she fully recovered. After 65 days in the hospital, Teresa had bullet fragments permanently lodged in her brain and no memory of that day, but she was still alive.
Oh, Teresa, that's my hero, too.
Her parents filed a $14.5 million lawsuit against Kip and his parents' estate. The suit claimed that Kip was negligent in entering the school and discharging weapons. It also claimed his parents were negligent in providing Kip with firearms and failing to supervise his access to them. The suit claimed to recover damages to her medical bills, which at the time exceeded $250,000. And were expected to continue for the remainder of her life. It aimed to compensate for pain and suffering, loss of future income, and emotional distress. The claim was finally settled in 2003. Out of the 14.5 million requested, they agreed upon 5 million. It's unknown whether any portion of the judgment will ever be paid, because the estate of the Kinkles was estimated to be worth around $400,000. Another student filed a claim against Kip, but unfortunately it never came to light since he ended up dying in a hunting accident later on.
Oh, that's horrible. You survive a school shooting by a lunatic and then you die in a hunting accident?
Kip still is in prison. He was sentenced to 111 or 12 years in prison. He received 25 years for each of the homicides, 87 years for wounding all 24 people, and then the attempted murder of the police detective. So that's where all of his pleas were. So he did not just get a life sentence. Mm-hmm. He got separate sentences. Since Kip is being incarcerated, Kip earned his bachelor's degree. He has an electrical license, and he's the prison's electrician. He also teaches yoga in the mental health ward in the prison. And he was the first juvenile in the state to serve out a life sentence. But like I said, it technically wasn't a life sentence. It was different.
Well, it's going to be a life sentence, though, right? I mean, in the end, he can never get out.
But this is interesting. Of all the people to evaluate Kip, only one said that he wasn't mentally ill when he committed the crime, and that was Dr. Hicks.
The one that knew him the best, actually.
Right. He was the only one to have known him before the murders occurred,
right.
He was actually, he had the doctor-patient thing.
Yeah.
You know, he actually saw him as a doctor and not as a court psychiatrist. Also interesting to note that because of his age, the death penalty could not be pursued. Kip would later try and fight his sentence after the Supreme Court decision that life sentences imposed on minors were considered cruel and unusual punishment. And that, I believe, is the 2012 Supreme Court decision of Miller versus Alabama. His charges, he actually wasn't charged, like I said, for a life imprisonment. He was done on separate charges. Or he was put up on separate charges. And here are the charges as followed. 4 counts of aggravated murder, 25 counts of attempted aggravated murder with a firearm, 1 count of attempted aggravated murder, that's for attacking the detective, 6 counts of assault in the first degree with a firearm, 18 counts of assault in the second degree with a firearm, and other felony offenses amounting to the total of 58 criminal charges. And in 2018, the courts ruled that Kip's crimes reflected irreparable corruption rather than youthful immaturity that could change, and noted that Kip's sentencing judge found that he had an incurable illness of either paranoid schizophrenia or schizoaffective disorder.
If he did not, like, if it was deemed that it was just a mature act, does that mean he would have gotten less time? That's how I read that. I mean, that's how I understood that. Is that right? Like, what he did was so bad, it wasn't just a case of a boy, boys will be boys and an immature act, right?
Right, right. That's how I'm taking it, too. That what he did, since he is a paranoid schizophrenic or he has some kind of the schizoaffective disorder, that he would probably be harmful for the community. He might go off his medication, perhaps. That they just kept him in, they're not going to release him. They're not going to give him a chance for parole. And honestly, I think that if he would ever get out on parole, that the entire world would scream.
Yeah. Wow. And to be locked up since you were 15. I mean, could you think of all the things that's happened since then?
No. In that PBS documentary that I watched, one of his friends, I think it was Tony, said that he's just has this sense of calmness to him now that he never had when he was that age. So I believe he's like on sports teams in the prison, and it seems like he's faring very well.
That would be a hard thing to forgive yourself, to be able to live with yourself after not only killing those innocent children, but killing your own parents, which goes against things.
Everybody's got that moral code that you shouldn't, or most people have a moral code that they shouldn't kill people.
Well, you think? And yet you and I still find people to talk about each and every week that don't have
that'll
that.
That'll never change.
All right, Jen, that gives me a lot to ponder about. I don't know, I kind of, you know, it's kind of the, we said it at the beginning, maturity of kids. Do they know what's right? Do they know what's wrong? And when? When does that occur? Do they right. not understand what they're doing, or do they? Maybe they do.
Upon listening to all the audio with Kip, mm-hmm. my heart aches for him, and that's just as a parent. I felt sorry for him. Believe me, I feel more sorry for the victims. I'm not trying to lessen what Kip did. What he mm-hmm. did was horrible and inexcusable, and he needs to be punished. But as a parent, hearing him and how distressed he was, mm-hmm. like I said, if he's acting, he's a hell of a good actor. Mm-hmm. It made my heart hurt. It really made my heart hurt for him. I felt pain. I don't know. And I just, he's 14 or 15. He's so young.
Young. Yes.
I know. He was so young.
I think
it's a shame.
One of the things that has changed me, well, I mean, it, of course, is being a parent, but something that occurred after I had children and being a teacher, right? And that's, I see these kids, like, and the kids that I have are 17 and 18 years old. They can, by law, go to prison. They can, if they commit an act, it's, they're going to be sentenced as an adult, right? They can die right. for their country. They can do all the stuff. But I still, and this, I think this is because I am a mom. I see their little face, and I still can see that little two-year-old that one mm-hmm. mother loved once upon a time. That, you know, the little boy climbed up in her lap, or the little girl climbed up and gave her daddy a hug. I see all that. And so I get it. It's hard. And especially that is an unhappy, unfortunate incident on all sides. The parents, the children, the classmates, the parents of Kip, Kip's sister. I mean, there were so mm-hmm. many people that were affected by this. And
so many victims. So many victims.
And I think
not just the ones that were injured or the ones that died, or the survivor, the ones that died family. I mean, every kid that was in that cafeteria, every kid that was in that school that day is a victim. And it's heart-wrenching. And how they continued to go to school afterwards, I couldn't even imagine.
I think if my kid was in high school, I would have homeschooled him after that. Just because I think it would be more beneficial to their psyche to do that than to send them off to school. But I don't know, maybe getting back to normal would be the better thing for them too. Who's to say? And guess what? I hope I never have to find out. I don't want to know.
No, I never want to have to know either. I never want to get that call. So anyway, that is our first school shooter thing. I hope we did it. Our first school shooter, first school shooting, however you want to say it. Like I said, it broke my heart to even have to do it. It's something that scares...
You were dragging your feet on this big time. And
it scares the stuffing out of me, to be quite honest.
Yep. Yep.
I'm going to cry again.
Don't cry. It's okay.
Here I go.
I sit in the classroom every day and think about this. It's terrible. We have to lock our door. We have to lock our classroom door when we're inside.
Yeah.
And I was like, how mm-hmm. is, that's just not okay. And so I'll forget, and the teacher will be like, hey, Anderson, isn't this supposed to be locked? And I'm like, oh, I forgot. Because that's just not normal to lock kids in with you. You know, it's just like that. That should not be happening. And yet we have to think about this. Our new policy, and it just changed last year after the Florida shooting. We used to be able to walk outside. The kids could walk outside between buildings on campus to go to class, and it's a lockdown. We were forced in lockdown, so all the kids could only travel inside the building. Like, they could not go outside. Well, they decided to change it this year, and the kids are ecstatic because it gets them to class a lot faster. And mm-hmm. also, if it's nice outside, you know, you get a little breath of fresh mm-hmm. air. But it's also, we have to be really diligent about being outside, being on duty, standing by the door, keeping our eyes open. And it's, anybody can walk on our campus at that time. We're not, it's not fenced in, you know, and that's, mm-hmm. again, that's like something you should not, we as parents and as humans should not have to be thinking about mm-hmm. this. Standing up there on the stairs and I'm like eyeing the crowd to make sure the kids are, you know, nobody looks suspicious or whatever. It's terrible. It's awful. And, you know, just, I don't know, with my own children, we've talked about it and stuff and just, you know, this homecoming, they had a threat during homecoming that somebody had made mm-hmm. a threat, and it turned out that it was fine. But, you know, the principal sends a note out. Well, I have two kids in high school and they were both going to homecoming. So I was like, this is weird. And I was supposed to be going like 2 hours away, and I canceled because I was like, I want to be home. I just want to be home. I don't want to be, should anything happen, right. I want to be home. I don't want to be 2 hours away. But again, right. this is stuff that we should not have to think about. And I don't understand. I don't get it. I don't understand.
I don't either. I don't. It's horrible. 1 year later, on April 20th, 1999, Columbine school shooting happened. And up until then, Thurston High School shooting was the deadliest school shooting to have ever happened until Columbine hit a year later.
Mm-hmm. And look at us now. Lots happened. Really terrible.
Well, now school shootings happen and hardly anybody blinks an eye.
It's too much.
It should not
it's
be like
much.
That. Mm-mm. All right. Merry Christmas, everyone.
All right. Stay tuned for our 12 Nightmares Before Christmas. And
it should be coming in a couple days.
Yep. And I hope everybody has a happy, healthy, safe holiday. And any gifts you can send to our P.O. box. No, I'm just kidding. Just to me, though. Just to me. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Anyway.
Remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya. Never mind. Cut that, Rico.
It's okay. Rico. You called him Rico. Rico.
I said Nico. Nico.
I swore you
didn't
said
I?
Rico. Hold on. My cat's crying. Stupid thing.
Okay.
Hold on. Oops. Okay, go. Get out of here. Go. Come on. Kitties love boxes, but every time she's in it, I think she's peeing.
Oh, no.
You know what I mean? So I'm like, what are you doing in there? All right.
Mine only likes to pee on the couch.
Oh, God, that would infuriate me, especially if you go, like, mm-hmm. sit on it and it's wet. Oh, my God, I'd have a heart attack.
After the car hit the rock, a police officer came and arrested Kipps.
After the car hit the rock?
Yeah, because the rock was falling and the car got in its way and it hit the rock.
Yeah, the car hit the rock. Okay.
Yeah. All right, scratch it. After the car, not right. After
the car was hit by the rock or after the rock?
Yeah. After the rock was thrown, scratch that too. I'm not even, fuck me. Now, those who knew her said that violence was the antithesis. I can't even say that.
Antithesis.
Yes. So those who knew her said that violence was the antithesis.
Antithesis.
Yeah.
That one person said we can't.
How come I can't say that?
We can't talk real good.
Antithesis. Antithesis. And
don't look at it. Don't look at it. Look up.
Antithesis. No, looking at it helps me because I want to put the this at the end. So those who. Yeah. So those who knew Faith said that violence was the antithesis. Woo! I said it. So, fuck me running, man. Okay, so those that knew Faith, I'll say that again since you heard. All right.
It's funny.
So this is around the same time that Kip had his third counseling session with Dr. Hips.
Okay. These hips don't lie.
These hips don't lie. He's a sexy doctor.
All right. I know you probably think that the cat just does that because I'm in here recording. No, he does that nonstop. Like he wants it. He cries to one in, he cries to one out. Mm-hmm. He cries to one. It's a nonstop revolving door.
That's Reggie.
Nonstop.
That's Reggie. He wants
it
in
drives
and out.
Me.
Outside, inside, outside, inside, outside. It's insane.
It drives me insane. The one morning I counted it. It was 8 times in 45 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yep. That's why.
Okay, go ahead.
I always keep doors open except to go outside. But Reggie's an asshole, so it doesn't matter. Okay, anyway. And we're back. Sorry, Nico. We had to take a little break.
And we're back. And we're back. Look who's back. Look who's back. Look who's back.
The shit really hits the fan, I guess we can say.
Is this the antithesis?
Yeah.
Antithesis?
Sure, antithesis. See, I can say it now, but I couldn't earlier.